Hey everybody, I just want to let you know that the entries for this year's Sleepwire Pro-Am and Listener Leagues are now available. Coming back for the fifth season, we once again have a great lineup of pros, including Jake Seeley, Matt Harmon, Mitch Renz, Pat Fitzmaurice, Marcus Grant, Justin Boone, the Sleeper app, and so much more. We have so many options for you to play with the pros and us this season. A one-time $50 donation to our Patreon page will get you into the Pro-Am. A one-time donation of $30 gets you into a listener league with us, and a one-time $75 donation gets you into both the Pro-Am and a listener league. Visit patreon.com/sleeperwire to make your donation, and then screenshot your confirmation email and send it to sleeperwire@gmail.com, and we'll make sure to get you on the list. Make sure to include your name and your sleeper username in the email. Once again, that's patreon.com/sleeperwire and send it to sleeperwire@gmail.com.
It's your host, Lucas, and today we are rolling deep. Joining me from the Sleeper Wire side of things, we have George. George, how are you?
Fantastic, Lucas. How are you doing, sir?
Hey, I'm doing great, and we are thrilled to also have a couple of very special guests and friends of the show, Kate and Michelle from the Ball Blast Pod. Girls, tell us a little about yourselves.
Hi.
Hello. I'm Kate, for those of you who don't know. You can follow me on Twitter at FFBallBlast. We do the Ball Blast podcast. If you aren't listening, you should start doing that right now. Fantasy football, two ladies talking fantasy football. Not a common thing. Should be more common than it is. But
I agree completely.
It's been a crazy ride. We just started in March, and we're finding a lot of success so far. We got on a lot of cool guests. This week we had Liz Loza on. She was amazing. Michelle, what do you have to say?
You can find me at BallBlastEM. And yeah, just go listen to our podcast so you can get all of our thoughts coming from our brains just thrown into the podcast. We say thoughts. It all.
Yeah. We don't hold back. We're not afraid of spicy takes. We're not afraid of the contrarian.
There's a lot of people who get mad at us, but
we back it up. We always back it up.
Yeah.
It means you're doing something right. If you have a lot of haters, it means you're doing something right. And I have to say that I've listened to a few of the podcasts, and they've been smooth. They've been a lot of fun to listen to. You guys keep the pace rolling, and you really put a lot of research into what you are saying. You're not just off the top, just spitballing. There's a lot that goes into
Preparation for podcasts. You don't realize that until you start doing podcasts, how much preparation really goes into it. So we always make sure we're 100% prepared before jumping on. We don't ever want to half. Are we allowed to swear on this
half
podcast?
Half butt it.
Yeah.
Wait a second. So we just don't turn the microphones on and start talking?
Hey, there is a method to the madness sometimes.
I've been doing this wrong for years.
We're doing this wrong. I mean, come on.
George, no, it's been working for you on the break from the grind.
It's been working for me all over. I'm just here for the giggles.
I've always been that way, though. Like, when I've had presentations for class, like, I make sure I do way too much for it because I want to feel comfortable when I'm talking. So I've always been that preparation type of girl.
You're very lucky that I'm even able to do pop. You're very lucky. Look at me. I'm just a douche. When I've done, I can't public speak. So we're at the Midwest Fantasy Football Expo coming up next weekend. I am a really bad public speaker. I turn bright red. I speak way too fast. I ramble. This is going to be really interesting and fun.
Well, podcasting helps a lot with that because one of the first things when people get on podcasts is they talk really, really fast. And so podcasting kind of helps with public speaking in that way.
You learn to sort of tone it down a little bit, just a little bit.
it's tough with how enthusiastic we are about fantasy football.
Yeah, I know. I get so excited and I talk a mile a minute. That's just like how I talk in life, though. I'm a very fast talker. My whole family is. So I do try to tone it down in the podcast, but it's very hard.
It is. And, you know, people talk about they want to listen to it on 1.5 times speed. And I don't feel like people can do that with our podcast, because if they do, they're not going to understand a single word that's coming out of our mouths.
I don't understand how anyone listens to it in that speed, but apparently it's a new hot thing to do.
It just makes me giggle, though, like when people, their voices are just a little bit higher. I'm like, I can't take it seriously.
The
slower
one is the funniest.
Oh,
where they sound drunk when you slow it down. It's great.
It makes makes me anxious when I listen to it too fast.
I listen to every podcast at 1.5 speed.
I enjoy the length of podcasts. So people who are like, I hate when it's over an hour. Like, I like when my favorite podcasts are over an hour. It's always like, it's during my commute or when I'm working, like I have my headphones in, or if I'm doing the dishes. Like, I like those timely podcasts. I guess maybe I don't listen to enough where it really bothers me. I don't need to fit that many in. But
I'm probably saying way too much about myself, but I have a podcast that comes out once a week that I listen to. It's 3 hours long. It's a wrestling podcast.
Ooh.
And it goes along with what you were saying about the length of the podcast. If you can keep my attention for 3 hours, great. I don't care how long the podcast is. If you get it for 1.5 hours, that's fine. I don't think there should be a set time for how long your podcast should be. As long as it's entertaining and it keeps somebody's attention, you shouldn't limit yourself to just 1 hour.
Yeah, I'm totally with you. And we moved to 2 episodes a week now, and we thought, okay, we'll have to find stuff to talk about. But no, it's still hard to keep it like at the hour mark or under. There's just so much. There's so much to talk about, and it's also exciting. We're close to the season. It's just so much
energy. Like, it's very hard to stop it when the ball starts rolling, man. Whew.
It absolutely is, and we're getting ready to really kick things off with Sleeper Wire. We have our Metal Mock Mondays, which is an interactive mock show. We have our Mail Sack Wednesdays, where we have call-ins and live listeners, and that's usually a 2 or 3 hour show. The Thursday recap, and then the Sunday Blitz, where we have call-ins and help people on the Sleeper app to set their lineups.
That's awesome. I love it.
It's really taken some time, but we have a great crew of guys over here. And why don't we jump into it? Today we're going to be talking about draft strategies, and I want to get y'all's take. When you go into – let's start with the girls here, George. When you guys – the ladies. Excuse me. I keep calling you girls. The ladies.
Ladies first.
I'm good.
Do you guys have a certain draft strategy when you go into these drafts? Do you use a tier-based system? Do you use more of a value-based system? Or what do you do?
So we definitely use a tier-based system. We have our tiers, and you know, you want one of the last ones in the tiers because you're trying to get the best value. So when you're in the draft, we definitely use the tiers. This year, I'm seeing myself and Mox really going running back heavy in the first few rounds. I think having those elite running backs this year will just totally separate you. And there's so many wide receivers later in the rounds that I love. So that's where I'm going this year. But every year it changes in that way. And then I'm really noticing, obviously, like everybody else, late quarterback, late tight end is just the way to stack your team up.
It really does seem that way. And it wouldn't shock me at all if there are, I'm going to say four, that's probably over under for me, is 4 tight ends that are currently drafted out of the top 13 or 14 that will finish mm-hmm. as a tight end one.
Yeah, you have Delanie Walker, Jimmy Graham, like a lot of the old guys going
Jordan
so
Reed.
Late.
Jordan Reed.
Oh, Jordan Reed. I love Jordan Reed.
See, my two favorites for the old guys are the Delanie Walker and Jimmy Graham. But Jordan Reed, yeah, if you want to grab him in the last round, that's where he's going. Like, go ahead. Who cares? If he gets hurt, he gets hurt and go stream the position. It's not a big deal.
Yeah, let's not forget about Jason Witten, though, okay? And can we not forget about him? He's going to do something this year, right?
I feel like we can forget about him.
I completely agree. As a Cowboys fan, I think that he's going to bring a lot of leadership back to the team for some of the younger guys that are in there. But I don't expect him. I'm not sure that I expect 35, maybe 40 catches from him this season.
Yeah, I don't.
Snap count. It's going to be his touches are just going to be limited based on that fact. Now, if you told me Zeke was out for the season and they were willing to up Witten's Yeah. Snap counts? Sure. That's fine. I think they said they want to use them like 20, 25 snaps a game.
I think, yeah, it was really limited.
Yeah, if we're talking late round flyers for tight end, my favorite is Austin Hooper. According to Fantasy Football Calculator, right now he's going almost at the back end of the 10th round. I mean, you can't beat that. He was a beast last year, and I think he's just going to be even better this year.
Yeah, I'm totally with you. I like that in the late 10th, if you can get him. I feel like he has some hype going, so maybe he could, you know, maybe one person in your league really loves him and he could go earlier. Delanie Walker for me, I mean, he always ends as a top 8 tight end, like just consistently, normally a top 5 tight end. So people just forget about him because of the one injury that made him lose a whole year.
Or we could talk about cult favorite, Mark Andrews, who in his rookie season just dominated pretty much all metrics, yards per route run, among tight ends, among rookies. Outstanding. Average depth of target. Like, he is such a great buy when you're looking at a Ravens offense that wants to throw the ball to the tight end. I think they ranked 6th or 7th in the league among target share for the tight end last year. I don't see it changing.
What doesn't make sense to me is there's so much Mark Andrews hype, but his ADP is not moving up at all.
No, he hasn't budged. Why not, guys? Tell me this.
That's a really great question. And maybe it's just because it's an industry thing that that we are all seeing the possibility for Mark Andrews, and it just hasn't quite caught fire. I think that it probably will. I've been watching him since he was at OU with Baker Mayfield, just absolutely tearing things up. And he had a really good rookie season. And it wouldn't surprise me at all for him to be one of those guys that finishes in the top 8 pretty easily.
Yeah, and he's had a great camp, too, based on all reports that I've heard. Besides Boykin, I think he's been the guy I've heard about the most.
Yeah, they're looking right here. I looked him up, and they're saying that he's been the most dangerous and productive offensive player in training camp. Last year, like you guys said, he finished with over 500 yards. I mean, he's been absolutely phenomenal. And if Joe Flacco is going to throw the ball, or I'm sorry, not Joe Flacco,
Lamar
Jackson. Thank you. Flacco was last year. He's last year's news. if Jackson's going to throw the ball, listen, he's got no deep accuracy. He could throw the ball deep, but his accuracy is terrible. He's going to throw it short, and that's where Mark Andrews is going to feast this year.
I don't know. Speaking of Flacco, I don't remember where I either read or heard this, but he always gets to practice before all of the other players, and the linemen took it upon themselves to have a competition to try to be there before him. And they got there, it's like 5:55 in the morning, one of them did, and they were the second person there. Flacco was already there getting ready.
You've got to be kidding. That's actually pretty awesome to hear. Good for Flacco. Putting in the time and in a new offense, that's outstanding.
He was upset when they drafted Drew Locke. He was not happy about that at all.
Well, yeah, it would be his second year in a row getting his job taken from a rookie. So I can't imagine that feels good.
No, so he's out here trying to prove something. So maybe the Broncos will do more than most of us think that they will.
Probably not.
Probably not.
Probably not.
I'm keeping out. I'm holding hope here. I'm a Lindsay truther. I know that I'm in I'm in the minority right now with Royce Freeman and him ripping off the 50-yard run. But I didn't think that was that impressive last night. It was a pretty good size.
Oh no, it was a wide open ball.
No, that was not. And it actually, if anything, it showed his limitations because he was caught.
He got caught.
He slowed down. Yeah.
So
I'm not even a big Lindsay fan, but I am not going to get excited about Royce Freeman because of that play at all.
You know who's getting caught tonight? Benny Snell.
Yeah, Benny Snell is not.
Oh my goodness,
he's looking really bad, actually.
Yeah.
You see what Matt Kelly put on Player Profiler for his background photo, right?
No, I didn't.
It's a snail.
That's great. I mean, I'm rooting for him because he's a Steeler, but so many people have told me this offseason that Snell is going to take Connor's job and it's the goal line work, even though Connor was legit one of the best goal line running backs in the league last year. But, you know, Snell's just going to come in and take all of his work. But
yeah, that ain't it, Chief.
Yeah.
Yeah, that will not happen. And Jalen Samuels isn't taking that position either. James Connor's going to be a bell cow. People don't need to be worried. James Conner's going to be the guy. He's not losing much to Jalen Samuels.
If you're in a league, if you're in a league with me, Benny Snell's taking the job, and you should stay as far away from Connor as possible.
You should also probably draft Snell, you know, like pretty early, I would say. Early.
So that sounds like that's one of your draft strategies here.
Yes, first, second round.
Yeah. Now, my other question would be, how do you change your strategy going from, let's say, a super flex to a standard to a PPR? Do you just adjust your rankings for all of that? Or what do you find an effective tool when you're drafting?
So, yeah, you would just adjust your rankings and the tiers based off of, different scoring points, especially with when you're looking at PPR versus standard. I'm a little bit lower on a Chubb or a Mac or a Henry in a PPR, but they would shoot way up in a standard, you know, like I would be fine taking a Chubb in the late first, early second. But then when you're in a full PPR, I kind of want one of those backs that can give you that passing catch, like a really elite pass catcher as a running back. And then when you're looking at super flex, I hate taking quarterbacks early, but you need two in super flex. They just go off the board. So I want two quarterbacks on my team before, you know, the sixth round, preferably before the end of the fifth round.
But still, I think even for super flex leagues, we each sort of in the most way that you can subscribe to the late quarterback in a super flex league. Like, I think I speak for both of us when we say that we're both okay with those like middle range to even like lower end quarterbacks, because you know they score points. Like the point differential is just not high enough for me. I know you're playing two of them, but still, it's not worth it to me to take like an early round quarterback unless I'm in Scott Fishbowl, which I did.
Yeah, Scott Fishbowl. I picked too early, man. I picked the quarterback too early. I got nervous.
What round did you guys take your first quarterback in the Scott Fishbowl?
I got Deshaun Watson in the second round, and the quarterback run never happened. I was just waiting for the run to happen and happen. It never happened. And then I think I got Cam Newton in the fifth. So I was very happy with the Cam Newton pick, but the Deshaun Watson, I could have got a Chubb there or a Connor even, which is killing me that I could have got Connor right there and I took Deshaun Watson.
Nobody's going to laugh at my joke. He got a Chubb.
We're professionals, ma'am.
I'm like a 6-year-old boy here. Come on.
Yeah.
We're professionals, ma'am.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
I should not be saying I'm a professional. I just completely lied to everybody listening. So I took my first quarterback in the Scott Fishbowl in the third round. I stacked Julio and Matt Ryan. And then I took Big Ben in the sixth and Sam Darnold in the ninth. And then I took I took the Hall of Famer, Daniel Jones, in the 17th, 18th round. He did.
Very good last night.
I love
He did.
Wait, what is the over-under for our debut for Daniel Jones in the regular NFL season? Over-under, which game?
What,
5.
Setting the over-under at 6.
Okay. When's
their bye week? Bye week?
Great question.
Because
I think it's still late.
Okay, I was going to say, if it's early or in the middle of the season, I'm going with whatever week is after the bye week.
So like a Ravens type sitch.
Yeah. I think they're going to be pretty 11, much
week 11. Yeah, bye week 11.
Does that change your thought at all? So like, would you say, oh, we're not going to see him until week 12?
I think that's a possibility, a strong possibility, to be
honest. Ooh, they open up with the Bears. That would be a rude awakening.
It,
yeah,
it would
I think they're going to – I think the Giants know that they have no chance.
The Giants' defensive schedule is kind of brutal.
Their schedule is just brutal altogether. I think they know they're not going to be good, and I don't think throwing Daniel Jones out, you know, early in the season – does him or the organization any good. So I will still stick with after the bye week. I think once they know, okay, we're completely eliminated from playoff contention, let's give Daniel Jones a shot, see what he's got.
Yeah, I'm with you there. They don't want to bench Eli. They're very adamant about Eli being their guy. So I think they give him until they're way out of the playoffs before they change it.
Can I ask you a question, guys? So last year we saw Rosen come in pretty early in the season. What was that, game 3?
Three. Yeah.
Was it game 3? Do you think that throwing Rosen into that sort of offensive disaster situation with the offensive line and it was looking like a disaster from the get-go. Do you think that that was the right thing to do for the Cardinals? Or do you think that like could have messed up his psyche just forever? Or do you think Josh Rosen just isn't that great?
I think he's the product of being on bad teams. So the Cardinals last year were a bad team. Their offensive line was terrible. Their coaching staff was horrendous. They completely misused the best weapon they have on their team. Their defense was trash. They were just overall a bad team, and there wasn't anything there for him. Unfortunately, he got traded to Miami. And as a Dolphins fan, I could tell you Miami is a bad team as well. I don't think it's fair. Oh, you have to be. I think the kid has talent. He looked decent in spurts last night, but he also did a lot of running for his life because Miami's offensive line was that bad. So I don't think he's getting a fair shake. If he stays in Miami and Miami does bad this year, like we all expect them to do, and then they go out and draft a quarterback next year, there'll be a quarterback competition for the starting job in 2020. I don't think Josh Rosen's going to get it. And because of the way his contract is structured and the deal that Miami got on him, I think he's a very capable, cheap backup for them. And they'll give whoever they draft the opportunity. Because if we take a quarterback next year, it's going to be early.
Yeah. And I think people are giving Josh Rosen almost a little bit too much. You know, they're saying, oh, he was playing on bad teams. But like any quarterback taken early in a draft is playing on a bad team. We saw flashes last year. We saw brilliance from Baker Mayfield with the worst coach in NFL history with a terrible line until he started playing. Like they did not block for Tyrod Taylor, and Baker just made them look better, I think, anyways. And then you saw flashes from Sam Darnold. You saw flashes from Josh Allen, from Lamar Jackson. Only Lamar Jackson was on a good team. Besides that, everyone was playing with a very crappy team. So we didn't see anything from Josh Rosen except for turnover after turnover after turnover. I don't think he's a good player. And I don't think I think a lot has to do with the offense he was in, but I don't think we can blame everything on that. You have to see some promising qualities out of a quarterback, and he just does not have them.
You literally took the words right out of my mouth. When I was thinking about it, none of these quarterbacks were thrust into a great situation. But you did see, like you said, you saw flashes from each one of them. Sam Darnold, he came out, he threw a pick right off the bat, but he turned around and had a fairly decent season. Baker Mayfield, he came in the middle of a game because of an injury when they were down. They had 0 points up at the board, and they turned that around and won that game. Lamar Jackson came in, he showed you, he couldn't really throw, but he showed you something with his legs. Josh Rosen was the only one that you can't find a single positive thing to say about him. I know that team was atrocious, but he was the only one of those rookies, and there's a reason that he was taken after Baker, after Darnold, and after Allen.
Remember when he was going to make us regret being taken?
With all that said, I still think Miami made the correct choice trading for him. Like, why not? He's cheap. You barely pay him anything. They did the right thing by keep trading down in the draft to give the Cardinals even a worse pick. They did all the right things. And I do think this year, like, you're not going to win anyways. Give Rosen a chance. See what he can do. Maybe he surprises us. And then if not, then you know what you have to do next season. You know you have to take quarterback.
100%. They'll give him a chance during the season, just so they can see exactly what they have. I have Miami pegged to win 4 games this year, so he's going to get on the field. He is going to get an opportunity. He looked decent in spurts last night. He looked very competent or capable, I should say, last night. But I mean, that was against second string guys and third string guys and probably some guys that are not even going to make the team. So
you assume the likely route for them is that Fitzmagic is going to start the season, and if they're winning with him, then he's going to keep playing. But as soon as they start faltering, then there's no reason to keep playing with him. There's no reason to go for a 500 season with Fitzpatrick. You need to see what you have in Rosen, like y'all were saying. And if you're not on a hot streak, Rosen's going in. So if they start out 0-3 with Fitzpatrick, I bet you see Rosen by the fourth game. And probably similar to what honestly, I think it's going to happen with Daniel Jones. If they're losing off the bat with Eli and they're just awful, there's no way that that fan base is going to they're not going to allow Eli to keep going.
They already booted Eli off the field yesterday.
Did they really?
Yeah. The first round, they booted him off.
Yes, they did.
That fan base is going to be screaming for Daniel Jones.
Yikes.
Talk about they want to see what they have there. That's a big one. So a couple other questions that I have for you guys here. This is always a topic that I don't feel like gets discussed enough. And a lot – veterans kind of have their own strategies. But for the newer players, and I know we do have a lot of them that are listening, what are some major do's or don'ts that you can think of off the top of your head that you would give to a new player?
My favorite piece of advice on this is something that was told to me like early on in my fantasy football days. And I don't feel like I was subscribed to it, and now I do. Don't draft a player just because their ADP says that you're supposed to. Just because their name's staring at you and you're on your draft board, you don't need to necessarily take them there. Draft guys that you like. Draft guys that you want to watch play. That's what's the most fun part about fantasy football, is watching your guys play, watching the guys that you like to see on the field succeed, right? So, like, have that balance between, yes, the talent, the expectations, but also just, like, pick guys that you actually want to watch football with.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was going to say. Even if there's a guy that falls a round later than his ADP, or even two, and you have not liked him all offseason, but he's staring at you, don't buy it. Don't go into it. Because you're just going to be disappointed. I mean, maybe they can surprise you, but I remember a couple years ago, Frank Gore was sitting there for me super late, and I'm like, oh my goodness, I know I should take him here. And I took him, and he was pointless, because that's why he fell. There's usually a reason he's falling. So I would just say, yeah, take your guys. Don't feel like you have to buy someone just because they look like they're value right now. They're probably not value. There's a reason why nobody likes him.
So when you guys are saying that, it makes me feel like you may have a couple of guys that you can name that are those players for you. Who might they be?
Mike Williams, even if he fell, I swear, to the seventh round, I'm not taking him. I don't believe in the player. I believe in his talent. I don't believe in his situation. I don't think he's going to see that many more targets. Maybe 90, but maybe 90 targets.
If Melvin Gordon were to sit out, would that change it all for you?
No, and I think he sees 90 targets. I think his touchdowns go down with Hunter Henry there. And I think he's a flex play that disappoints more times than he helps you. So I'm staying away from Mike Williams.
Are we asking about players that we like?
No, players that you won't draft.
Right now we're talking about players that you will not draft. Even if they've fallen in ADP and they are just not a player that you want to have on your team, it's not a headache that you care to have.
Josh Jacobs, and that was before the Antonio Brown. What is happening, guys? How have we not talked about this yet?
I knew we were going to get there.
I was waiting for it to come to me.
Yeah, it's here. We have to address this. This was before the Josh Jacobs news. First of all, I don't want to watch
Antonio Brown news.
Jacobs news. Yeah, Antonio Brown news. Sorry. This was before the Antonio Brown news that he might quit playing football because he doesn't like his helmet. I'm getting that story right, correct?
Yes, you are.
Okay. All right. Just making sure that I didn't like have a dream and just wake up from that or something. I don't care for the Raiders offense. I don't care for John Gruden. It's just not a situation that I think is ideal. And for fantasy football purposes, John Gruden just hasn't groomed super successful running backs. And I think that he's a really easy trap play going in the third or fourth round. There's a lot of guys that I think are well cemented on better offenses, like David Montgomery or even Sony Michel. I know he's falling so far in drafts right now, but I would rather maybe wait around and get a Sony Michel on a great offense with a questionable knee a couple rounds later than I would to draft a guy that I don't believe in the offensive system.
See, now David Montgomery for me is a guy that I absolutely love, and I think that he will be a monster. But touching on AB real quick, so from what I understand, he has something called trench foot. So he had issues with his feet prior to this, and then he went on to the little cryo machine, and didn't wear foot protection, and it exacerbated the issues that he was already having with his feet. And the helmet thing, the NFL has changed the helmets over time, and they allowed players that had helmets that they were doing away with to have a 1-year grace period to wear those helmets into last season. But now that grace period is up. And as far as I understand, Antonio Brown is using a helmet that's predating those. So it's technically still a legal helmet, but they want everyone to update these things. And I think, George, what you were saying was something about the vision of the new helmets. It impairs the vision. Is that right?
Yeah. One of his complaints was the newer style helmets affects his vision on the field. It's funny I got the sleeper alert today that Antonio Brown notified the team he didn't want to come back unless he could get his old helmet back. I immediately thought he wanted to be traded back to the Steelers. That's what I thought that the alert meant until I looked into it. And I wouldn't blame him. I wouldn't want to be on the Raiders either. But circling back to our do's and don'ts and tying it in with AB, one of the things that I don't do, especially early, I'm very risk adverse the first three rounds. If I'm drafting in the first few picks, consensus is Zeke, Kamara, CMC, and Saquon. If I will take all three of those guys over Zeke, I would probably take David Johnson right now over Zeke. I would take any of your top three or four wide receivers over Zeke. I don't feel comfortable drafting Zeke right now in the first round. I wouldn't touch Melvin Gordon in the second round. I wouldn't touch AB if he was falling into the third round right now. It's just those first three or four rounds, while I know the draft does not win you your championship, and you can rebound, but if you're drafting those guys and you're spending what their current ADP is, or you're reaching for them a little bit in the first round or second round, you're if they don't show up or they don't play, you're putting yourself way behind the eight ball. So I will never draft somebody if there's a risk involved with them, whether it be injury, holdout, or whatever. We've seen too many people get burned last year from Le'Veon Bell. He kept saying he was coming, he'd be there, and then he never showed up. And anybody who drafted him early felt the brunt of that the whole year. And it's just, personally, it's just something I don't like doing.
Yeah, and that's a fine strategy. And you're right. You may not win your draft in the first few rounds, but you can make it much more difficult by taking a player there and handicapping yourself and basically just not having a first or second round pick.
Yep.
One major thing that I would say is you have a lot of people that subscribe to the zero RB strategy or the zero wide receiver strategy. And I don't like pigeonholing myself into either of those. If you have an elite wide receiver or this is going back to our tier based. If you have a wide receiver that's in a higher tier and is a better player overall, you should take him rather – if you have the availability, you should take him rather than forcing yourself to take a lesser running back just so that you can have that running back. At the end of the day, you want players that you're going to put in your lineup that are going to score the most points. So just because you had this grand idea that you're going to have a bunch of – top wide receivers and you're going to be front heavy on wide receivers, if you have a really good running back that's fallen to you, take him for those points and just adjust.
Yeah, I'm with you there. And one thing I wanted to add to that was don't draft Kareem Hunt ever. I don't care if you see his name in the last round. It doesn't matter if you took him in the 10th round or the 16th round. It doesn't matter that you got the value in the 16th round. The whole point is that you have to keep him all the way up to week 10, and that's going to destroy your team. Unless you have a massively large bench, but if you have a normal 5-6 player bench, then you can't be, you know, making moves as much as you want on the waivers, because normally it's so hard to even find out who you want to drop in the first place. And then Kareem Hunt just has to sit there, and then he's like a running back by committee when he comes back. Like, that's what you get. So don't draft him, please. Nobody draft him.
And also, when it comes to, I wanted to add a note onto the fact of, you know, not necessarily sticking with your plan. Just draft good football players on your team that should score points and are in the situation to score points. Because even if you don't like want, you know, necessarily that sort of roster construction, say you ended up a little more wide receiver heavy than you really wanted to go, or like, God forbid, you're overloaded with running backs and you just want some wide receiver depth, drafting a good player that you objectively know is a good player despite your roster construction just gives you more trade leverage in the future when you complete your draft, start making moves.
Yeah, and I think we'll talk about that a little bit later about how I constructed my team in this draft night out. It was a little bit interesting of a way I did it. So I'll be talking about that later, I'm sure.
So,
Michelle and Kate, let me ask you a draft question. How do you feel about drafting quarterbacks early?
No, unless like Deshaun Watson fell to the late 6th, 7th round. If I'm in a league where they're not taking quarterbacks, then maybe I would draft one there. But besides that, I like so many quarterbacks going in the 11th and round and later.
I'll make one comment. There are some, I actually took, I took Deshaun Watson in our draft night out league in round 5. If there's maybe a guy in a certain round that I'm high on, or if I don't see a guy I like, right, a guy I have a feeling about, a guy that I think is worth that price, I'm going to take the best player available. Like in round 5 of draft night out, I was looking at all the guys sort of going around that range, and I said, you know what, I'm not crazy about any of these guys, so I'm going to take the guy that I think is going to lead the league or lead the position, right? I'm going to take Deshaun Watson because I like that. I like that value when, you know, I don't like the other guys that are currently being drafted. So I sort of take that approach. You know, I like the late round quarterback, but if all the guys I sort of had pinned for that round aren't there, that's the moment that I'm willing to sort of try something out and, you know, maybe go after a guy like higher than I would like him just for the fact that, you know, I don't like what's there.
And Cam Newton, man, is going late. Ooh, so if he late. Gets into the, you know, the 9th round, I'm taking him. There's so many quarterbacks I like later, but Cam is a top 3 quarterback when he plays, and he has the opportunity to be the quarterback 1 in a year. So if he falls to me in the 9th round, I'm taking him. I don't care.
I couldn't agree more. I love Cam. I've been watching a little bit of the Amazon series on the Panthers, and the shoulder does make me a little bit nervous. He took some pretty hard shots to it, but if reports come out over the next few weeks that his throwing motion is fine, he's really without pain mostly, Cam is such a value right now in drafts.
A steal.
And, you know, since we've already kind of started talking about it, we might as well jump right into our Draft Night Out drafts. And for those of you that do not know, Draft Night Out was this event that we did where we had 50 or 60 people that all came to Top Golf. Top Golf donated their event space to us, and we had 3 simultaneous live drafts going. And Kate and Michelle were both in a league with me. And so we're going to talk a little bit about our draft here. And this was a few weeks back. And let's talk a little bit about how things have changed and what picks that you're still very happy with. And that's one of the beautiful things about doing the research early into the year is if you see trends happening before other people and you have these drafts early, you can make some steals for players that you feel like are going to move up the draft board late into the season.
Hey, Lucas.
Yes.
Just want to throw out there that the draft that you guys did at Draft Night Out was – pretty much a all-star who's who in the fantasy community draft. This wasn't a normal 12-person draft. You guys had a whole bunch of heavy hitters, and pretty much everybody in that draft knew what they were doing and puts in the same amount of research. So this was one of my favorite drafts to watch as an outsider looking in, watching it at Draft Night Out.
It was a lot of fun. We had Kate and Michelle, we had Keaton, we had Nate Hamilton, We had Mitch Renz in there. I'm not sure. Keto Corey we have in there, who's an up-and-comer. We had a lot of really, really powerful drafters in here. And so for this draft, we had no kickers, no defenses, one extra flex, a short bench of only five, and an extra flex spot, half-point PPR. So I want to know what y'all's strategy was going into this. I know that Michelle really just wanted to load up on Steelers is what it looks like, taking Connor and Juju at the 112 and the 2-1. Was that something you planned on doing going into this, or it just fell to you that way?
It just fell to me that way. So I'm at the turn, and when you're at the turn, you have to take your guys. I really, really wanted Julio Jones there. So I pretty much knew I was taking James Connor once it got to that point, because he's one of my top five running backs for next season. But Julio Jones is my wide receiver one, so I really wanted him there. He was taken right before me, so then I just, you know, went on to my next guy, which is Juju. Juju's my wide receiver three, so Hopkins is my two, but he was taken well before that, obviously. So I went with Juju as my wide receiver three, and I was very happy with that, and it doesn't bother me that they're on the same team at all.
Yeah, that it wouldn't bother me either. When you're dealing with your studs like that, you can throw all the rest out the window. You just want the people that are going to be getting you points day in and day out. Kate, tell us a little bit about the beginning of your draft.
The beginning of my draft. So I sort of subscribed to this idea that I would try to go best player available. So I went to Devontae Adams. I think he's I don't own any shares of him. Him, Hopkins, and Jones are all like within 5 points of each other in my ranking. So I feel like they're sort of it's sort of a wash. I wanted to get Devontae Adams just because, you know, sort of where I was drafting, it was a good opportunity just outside of the top running backs there. He's going to have a ton of touchdown upside always. Aaron Rodgers did not reach his career average as far as touchdowns last year. And of course he didn't. Like, he had a hobbled knee. He didn't have the best wide receiver core. But you've got a lot of rookies that are now sophomores who looked a little bit better at the end of last season, who now have a full off season in the Packers system. They've got a new coach, and you've got a presumably healthy Aaron Rodgers. So Adams was my pick there, and then when I swung back around, my man, Mike Evans, my wide receiver one.
Yeah, it's her actual, like,
is my it actual, your actual
wide receiver one. Yes.
She's obsessed.
Oh my gosh, so not scared of Godwin at all, or Howard, or anything.
She loves Godwin, but
I do. I love Godwin. I think that.
And you love
number,
Howard.
Yeah, I do. With all of the number of vacated targets in this offense, I don't think that they've added enough other weapons for them to be a big issue in my book. I mean, Godwin already saw almost 100 targets. O.J. Howard was on pace for a good amount of targets. I think Mike Evans, he's sort of seen both ends of the pendulum, right? So he's seen the high yardage situation. Last year, he finished with over 1,500 yards. Like, how has nobody acknowledged that? He was third in the NFL for yardage, and nobody's talking about this dude.
And he was actually on pace for more yards with Winston, I believe.
With
less
Winston,
touchdowns,
yes.
Less touchdowns, but more yards.
I want to say his pace with Ryan Fitzpatrick was around 1,300 yards. With Winston, he was...
I think it was like almost 1,800 yards. It's something absurd.
No, I think it was closer to 1,600. Nah. But... he was on pace for fewer touchdowns, which, you know, it's hard to score touchdowns when your quarterback's turning over the ball. So I think they've been working pretty closely with Jameis Winston to try to clean up his game. And I think if there's any coach in the system, I'm not going to trust Dirk Cutter to clean up a guy like Jameis Winston. I'm sorry. I think he's sort of a mess. But I think there's touchdown upside. We've seen him get 12 touchdowns before, I think twice. So you combine the touchdown upside with the fact that he can be a yardage monster. He's a wide receiver one for me, the wide receiver one.
I love Mike Evans. I think that the biggest gripe that people have with him is he doesn't get a lot of yak yards. He usually comes up and then goes straight down with the ball. And some of that is due to how the ball is thrown to him. He's not hit in stride with the ability to keep running. And some people will say that that's just how he stops on his routes. With Bruce Arians, people love Bruce Arians, but they talk about how it usually takes a year for the quarterback under his system to really grasp it. So it's the second year that they really come into their own. A lot of analysts in the industry are really high on Jameis Winston this year, and I understand why. But on the counter, I want to slow the roll just a little bit, because there is this track record with Bruce Arians of people learning his system, and there is some growing pains in that first year.
Can I counter your counter?
Yes, please.
Okay, so you know what the tendency tends to be with an unfamiliar situation and learning a new system, you're going to go to what you know. Mike Evans is what Jameis Winston knows. Like, that is, they have been paired up for years. They, I can't think of a duo that's probably more like linked in my brain right now. Just in general, I think that Jameis Winston wouldn't probably still be a starting quarterback if he didn't have Mike Evans. Like, I genuinely believe that. And if he's got a new playbook to work with and needs time to adjust to that, I think he's going to throw the ball to Mike Evans all the more.
I think Jameis Winston's going to struggle this year. Like Lucas said, he's got a new system coming in with Bruce Arians. It does take the quarterbacks in Bruce Arians' system a little time to get used to the playbook. And I honestly don't think Jameis actually puts the time in. I don't think football-wise, I don't think he's a very smart football player. I would like to be wrong, but I've never been very high on Jameis as far as a football player goes. Now, I get it. We're talking about fantasy, and he will put up numbers just because that defense is that bad. Their running situation is atrocious. But I just don't think Jameis is very smart, and I think we're going to see the same Jameis we've always seen. He'll throw for a lot of yards, but he's going to have a whole bunch of turnovers, and that's going to affect the production of Mike Evans, Chris Godwin, and also I think Justin Watson is – going to get an uptick in playing time. And I think he'll have a pretty decent season as well. So that's where I see some of the missing targets from Humphreys going is to Watson.
I have to say that I agree with the point that I think that Evans has very much made Jameis, because Evans has a track record of making quarterbacks. He made Johnny Manziel who he was at Texas A&M. The reason Johnny Manziel had a lot of the stats that he had is because he was throwing up deep balls into double coverage, and Mike Evans would come down with the ball, and then you see what Johnny did when he tried to come into the NFL. So real quick, and Kate was drafting from the sixth spot there. I was drafting from the third spot. I took McCaffrey at three. It was between him and Kamara for me. I love Kamara, but I think that the workload is swinging in McCaffrey's favor. They use him so much, it seemed like the safer pick. When it came back around, I was staring down. I was thinking a wide receiver here, and I had two guys that I really liked. I had Keenan Allen and T.Y. Hilton, who I thought one of the two would make it back to me, but one guy that I thought that wouldn't was Nick Chubb. So I took Nick Chubb as my second, and then once you know, Keenan Allen went, and Hilton went the pick right before me. I didn't love the wide receivers that were coming up next. My options were Amari, Thielen, and Diggs and Green. I'm still torn between Diggs and Thielen. I'm not a believer yet in Amari, and I am somewhat of a believer in Damian Williams. I know Michelle's going to make fun of me here. And we
made see the latest reports, though.
I did, and I think you and I are probably a little bit at a stalemate right now, because you thought someone would take that spot from him, and I thought that he was going to be a system guy that would come in and just do everything pretty well on a high-powered offense, and he would generate. And it doesn't look like anyone has really taken that spot from him. I know they're now talking about it being a running back by committee, but if he comes back and that hamstring is really not bothering him too much, I don't think any of those guys are good enough to take the spot from him.
I'm still not whatsoever high on Damian Williams. They will not be drafting him, but I did just say that on our podcast that we dropped on Thursday. Like, I felt disappointed by, the reports coming out of camp for these players behind Damian Williams while he was out. Like, yeah, we heard some good stuff, but I really didn't feel like we didn't see anything. We didn't hear enough. I do feel like Damian Williams will get his spot right back if his hamstring is healthy. So I could be totally wrong on him because no one, you know, no one's shined. And we're not in the game time yet. So no one really has a huge chance to shine in the game. So things could change if Damian Williams, you know, hurts his hamstring and has to miss a couple games there. He might not get his job back. But I'm still not high on him, but I totally get what you're saying right there, that you feel like nobody took his spot yet. And I agree.
Even if Williams gets 60% of the touches in that offense, I mean, that's about average of what most RB1s are getting on their respective teams. Very few teams have their Zeke, you know, their Kamara, their CMC, where they're getting just this ungodly workload. At 60% of the workload in Kansas City, he's going to be a top 12 running back, in my opinion.
Yeah, I don't think he's going to get enough carries. I really don't. I don't think he's going to be used as much as people think. And I don't think he never got more than 12 carries in a game in the regular season last year. And yeah, he had a few good games, but he also had a few really bad games on the ground too, that nobody talks about. I don't know. I don't like Damian Williams' talent at all. I do think sooner or later someone else will shine. I just don't think it's happened yet.
I just don't like the draft price with that amount of risk built in, when there are a lot of really talented guys with really secure roles on their respective offenses. I'm not buying it. They paid him peanuts.
Yeah, didn't you say you were risk averse for the first three rounds?
I am, and I like him, but I didn't say I would be drafting him in the first three rounds.
Okay. That makes sense.
It's just not like, when I'm looking at sort of the Chiefs' response to him, right, they said, like, yeah, he's the guy, but they haven't really indicated, like, we want him to be our guy. Like,
when you think about like a tone, like, right? He's going in the second round right now. And when you look at the guys going around him, Dalvin Cook, Nick Chubb, you even have Kerryon Johnson or Derrick Henry.
Mike Evans.
Yeah, but I'm just talking about running backs. They get hurt for a game, and you don't have to worry that his job's getting taken. You know, like, if a Nick Chubb gets hurt and he has to miss a game, he's getting his job right back. And so with all the other players around him, if Damian Williams misses even a quarter and someone else shines, like, you have to be worried. Like, why would you want that? Why would you want that risk? I do not.
And I know money doesn't mean everything, but he's literally making $100,000 less or more guaranteed money than Carlos Hyde. Like, it's not a lot of financial incentive. If something in their system is working with another guy, they don't have financial incentive to work him back into the game. You want those sort of bigger contracts that pull a guy back into the offense, because you're not going to let, you know, $6-7 million sit on your bench. Yeah.
Now, my only counter to that is going to be McKinnon with San Francisco. They paid him a lot of money last year, and he
can't stay healthy, though.
He can't. You're right. And I think that they just put him back on the pup.
They can't put him on the pup. I thought they couldn't.
No, they can't put him back on the pup, but he's not going to be playing for a while. Yeah. They may end up having to put him on IR.
Yeah, if they do anything, they got to put him on IR. They cannot put him on the pup.
Yeah.
What they need to do is just cut him.
Yeah, with the whole McKinnon thing too, they also just paid Tevin Coleman a good little chunk here too. So they have a couple players that they're paying a lot. Damian Williams, they could cut this year for, I'm not saying they will, that's not what I'm saying at all, but they could for very little dead cap, just like Carlos Hyde. Next year for real, they can cut him. So they have no ties to him whatsoever.
Yeah,
and Jared McKinnon, this was actually a good year if they are going to cut him or trade him. This is sort of a good year to do it, just based on the way the contract's structured. I can see maybe another injury. If they can prove that he's healthy and he can pass a physical and be active, I can see him being a guy that, you know, maybe now that Matt Breida is really more securing his role now in this part of the season than he has earlier. I can see him being a guy that maybe another team will acquire for depth, and it's a minimal hit to the San Fran cap space.
I think Matt Breida is probably the best running back in San Francisco personally. I like him better than Coleman. I like him a lot better than McKinnon. I think he's their best back, but he's got to prove he can stay healthy.
You should go read my San Fran running back thread, because Coleman's just as good as Breda, guys. You should go read it.
Their physical metrics are actually, I never realized their metrics were quite
people
as similar
also don't realize. Yeah, go ahead. Sorry. I just cut you off. Sorry. I got very excited.
No, it's okay. Steelers just made a pretty nice drive.
They did. So Michelle exploded. I was watching the Steelers play and Kate's talking. I got very excited.
I don't even know what I was saying.
Sorry, Breda.
Oh, their metrics are literally, when you put them back to back to back like that, they literally have three of the same exact running back on their roster. It's the creepiest thing I've ever seen.
Oh, yeah. They're so hyper, athletic. Hyper athletic. Yes. Three guys, all three of them, insane. But the reason I like Coleman is because he had a 5.8 yard per carry last year. That's not bad. He just wasn't getting carries. I mean, the team didn't rely on him. He wasn't getting the same amount of, actually, he did have the most targets in his career, but he wasn't getting the same amount of yards per completion. So it was much lower than his career high. You know, with Shanahan, that's going to go right back up. He's going to get the targets. He's going to be the goal line back. Every single one of their backs, guys, is under 190 pounds besides Coleman and McKinnon. Well, McKinnon's hurt. So Coleman had 8 rushing touchdowns with Shanahan, and that was with Freeman still being there. So I think he's the goal line back. He's going to see plenty of carries, plenty of touches. Coleman, I actually think, is a steal in the 6th round where he's going.
See, and I think that you're probably right there, but I also think it is going to be a large running back by committee. And I think both of them can have standalone value. Another couple that I think can have standalone value is another one that Michelle and I are kind of at odds at. It's Chris Carson and Rashad Penny.
Ooh.
I believe Chris Carson is such a steal in the 4th and 5th round, and I took him as my 4th player off the board, my 4th running back, and since it's dual flex, I felt fine running for running backs every single week and letting that be the core of my team. So, Michelle, 3 weeks forward, how are you feeling about the Chris Carson versus Rashad Penny dynamic?
I still think – so he's also one of those guys where if Chris Carson gets injured for a game, Penny can shine and take his job. I think both will be in a complete 50-50 running back by committee. So when it's that case, I want the guy that's going cheaper. So I want Penny because he's going, what, 2 rounds later, 3 rounds later sometimes?
Two or 3 rounds later, and yeah. I completely agree. And if you believe, if you're someone who believes this is going to be a 50-50 split, then absolutely you should take the later ground guy. I personally don't think it's going to be a 50-50 split. I think it's going to be more 60-40 or maybe even 65-35. They're using Chris Carson a lot more. They're scripting plays for him to catch passes, which was a huge knock on him.
Yeah, and remember actually, Jordan Howard last year was going to catch passes too.
Well, but I think Chris Carson's a better passer, and he's a semi elite talent. He played for Oklahoma State. He was a really good running back there, and he still has shown that he is a really powerful running back on a team that's going to run the ball a lot. And they vacated 112 rushes with Mike Davis being gone. So I do believe that both of them are going to have productive years, and they're both values being taken outside the 4th and 5th round.
Yeah, I'm starting to come around to Chris Carson a little bit. I'm still not going to be taking him anything because I believe in Penny, but I also believe that Penny will be the pass catching guy. I do think Carson will see more targets than last year, but Penny did have that nice little reception yesterday for what was it, 30 yards, 27 yards? It was something beautiful. It was pretty easy, actually. He just had to follow his blockers, but it was still beautiful in my mind.
It was, and it gave some truth to that. But I am taking Chris Carson in the 4th and 5th round in every single one of my drafts, including PPR. If he is there, he will finish as a top 16 running back, if not high. If he plays, you know, this is for every player, but if this guy plays, he is likely going to be an RB1. He was the RB3 or 4 through the last 4 or 5 weeks of the season last year. Total stud.
I'm looking at your draft, and you took Chris Carson, and then Kenyon Drake went afterwards, Philip Lindsay, Tariq Cohen, Mark Ingram, Darius Geis. I'm fine with you taking Chris Carson there. Honestly, he's...
I'd want him ahead of all.
Yeah, I would want him ahead of these guys. I mean, they're all risky, so why not take the guy that did it last year and just see if he can repeat?
That's right, and I was looking – you know, I really wanted to take a wide receiver at my 3rd pick but Keenan Allen and Hilton were both taken. So ended up with Williams. Wanted to take a wide receiver with my fourth pick, and Woods was going to be the guy that I was targeting there based on the guys. I didn't love Galladay and Lockett, who went right after. I'm not sold on Galladay. I would rather have Marvin Jones, who I still think is their number one.
I would rather have Marvin Jones too, because he's much later. Like if they're equal price, obviously I would go with the ceiling of Galladay.
Sure.
But if I'm going to choose one of them, I'm just going to wait for Marvin Jones later.
Six rounds later. Like, how does this even make sense? He finishes the wide receiver 7 2 years ago.
What's because crazy if I was in your spot, sorry that I just cut someone off, get right back to that. But if I was in your spot, Lucas, with Chris Carson there in the fourth round, I probably would have went with Chris Godwin, who I took a round and a half later.
Yeah. See, and what I really would have done is taken him. But I kind of like Alshon Jeffrey. I'm a big Wentz believer this year. I think he finishes as a top six. He was in the running to finish the top quarterback before he got injured, and I think he's back to that form now. I think Jeffrey's due for a big season. He's had big seasons in the past when he stayed healthy, and I don't think that DeSean Jackson is going to take enough work away to make Jeffrey not relevant.
I agree with you with that. Yep.
Okay, so let's talk about a couple of y'all's favorite picks. Kate, if you want to chime in here, sorry, I know we've been talking over you for a little while now. Let's let you rant for a little bit here. What were your two favorite picks? It could be value-wise or just players you really love to have on your team. You've already talked about Evans, so don't say him again, but what are two other guys that you really like where you got them on your team?
Evans, definitely. other than that, I like the value I got on Vance McDonald. I got him in the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9th round. Not bad. I like Vance McDonald. I like the potential in this offense. What we saw, if he can stay healthy, what we saw last year in the Steelers offense, Ben sort of just flip-flopped between him and Jesse James. Jesse James isn't there anymore, so that's some nice vacated targets. The two of them would have combined for 1,000 yards. If we can funnel the majority of those tight end targets to Vance McDonald, obviously you want to get Gentry involved, but I don't see him making a huge impact his rookie season. I think that he's a great value. And then let's talk about the next round where I got Mr. Singletary.
I love that pick. I really do. After seeing, and you know, so this draft again, it was 3 weeks ago, guys. And a lot of these players we hadn't seen much out of them. Devin Singletary could be a league winner. It's not going to be McCoy. It's not going to be Frank Gore. Devin Singletary is going to be that guy. I am 100% certain. And I think you're going to see him going at the sixth or seventh round by the time we get to the third or fourth week preseason.
Well, we need to start. I think it's LeSean McCoy then, if we're gonna affect ADP whatsoever. I'm gonna need to say that, yeah, it's definitely McCoy, and then obviously there's TJ Yeldon in the mix, so you definitely don't want to draft Singletary.
And then there was that guy from London that came in,
Governor London, Governor
Wade ripped off the 65-yard run yesterday. Yeah,
he's going to be the lead guy. Go draft him, please.
Yeah,
Singletary, he has so many knocks on him. I've been honestly tired of defending this dude all offseason. As soon as he was drafted, I was like, this is the perfect situation. I know everybody says, well, the Bills don't have trouble with cap space. Well, you know what? If they want to cut LeSean McCoy, they're going to save $6 million. So guess what? You could cut him, and then you have room to make another defensive signing or another
defensive and O-line.
Go for your offensive line. Protect your young quarterback who likes to run around. You need a good offensive line if that's going to be the case, if you're going to protect this guy. That's more money that you can spend elsewhere where you need positional depth. It's not that you have a cap space problem, but leave yourself some room to make a bigger signing, a bigger trade, a bigger mark on your team. And Devin Singletary, he had a terrible combine, which I think is really helped me out as far as acquiring him in fantasy football leagues. He gets a lot of heat. They say he's too slow, he's too short. You never see guys that are that slow and that short succeed in the NFL. Well, you know what? Like, if you watch his tape from college, he doesn't look slow. No, he looks super explosive. He looks like just a really smart running back who knows how to utilize his blocking schemes, and he sees holes and he goes through them. And I think we already saw that in game one of the preseason last night, which is you know, obviously that it's not a starting defense. You know, might be some starting pieces there, but he looked fantastic last night. Even on runs that don't look that easy, he found room, and I think that's what I like about Devin Singletary. He just has that vision to make cuts, and I'm excited for this dude.
So I'm sitting back here listening to you guys just give amazing take after amazing take. I'm listening to you just completely dog T.J. Yeldon and LeSean McCoy, and I'm perfectly fine with that. But let me just jump in real quick and say, if anybody besmirches the name of Frank Gore, we're gonna fight.
We'll keep Frank Gore out of our mouths,
guys. Have you played Madden 20?
No,
I refuse. Keenan Allen's my boy, and I refuse to play it because they dogged him.
Okay, well, they didn't dog Frank Gore. Frank Gore is like a just powerhouse. Like, he is.
He's a wild beast in the game. You can't take him down.
Holy moly. He is like, he's everything. And so is Devin. Like, the run game in general for the Bills and Madden 20 is pretty awesome. But I will say, Frank Gore, holy, like, you want to talk about value in Madden 20. That is your value right there. Frank Gore, he's like beast mode.
He's a cyborg.
Yes, 100%.
Michelle, you've been very patient. Would you like to tell us about a couple of your favorite picks that are not on the Steelers?
Yes, sir. So I have to decide which of my Tampa Bay Bucks is my favorite pick here, because I took Chris Godwin and O.J. Howard. I do think getting Chris Godwin in the late fifth is a steal, because right now he's going in the late fourth. So he's gone up a whole round of ADP since this draft. So I was very excited to get him there. We saw him score a touchdown tonight. You got to love that on the first drive. I think there's going to be plenty of targets to go around with 224 vacated targets with Tampa Bay. I do believe that Winston can have two great wide receivers and a great tight end, because I took O.J. Howard with my next pick. I think he can support them all. There's plenty of targets to go around. And then my next favorite pick was in the 12th round with John Brown. I stole the wide receiver one for the Bills. And yes, I'm proud of it. I'm not worried about Josh Allen, about his accuracy, because Josh Allen throws the deep ball more than any quarterback in the league. And John Brown last season with Joe Flacco had the most targeted deep passes out of any wide receiver in the league. So from weeks 1 through 9. So they are a perfect pair. All you're hearing out of camp is that they are connecting, which is all you want to hear right now, that they actually have that connection. And I think it's going to be a beauty. And in the 12th round, give me that risk and let me play him in the flex. And he's going to be a boomer bust player, but he can definitely win me some weeks when he goes off with those big bombs.
Are you smiling right now? Because I can literally hear your smile when you're talking about John Brown.
I wish I made her smile like that.
I'm pretty equally excited about the Bills. Obviously, you can hear me talking about Devin Singletary and the receiving game. I love Zay Jones, Robert Foster, and John Brown. I love all of them. I was pretty disappointed when Zay Jones went down yesterday. What's his current status? What's the latest you guys have heard about Zay?
Ooh, you know, I haven't heard anything. I know. Yeah, I think he went in for a concussion, right?
Yeah, he got a forearm to the back of the head. So I'm a little worried it's a concussion or a neck thing, but I think they did clear him of the.
They did. They, yeah, I'm looking at it right here. He's been cleared. He's been cleared.
Now, we reached out and we talked to one of the beat writers for the Bills, and they had a lot of positive things to say about John Brown. The word through the team is that Zay Jones is their one, that is their guy that they really want to target. I think John Brown is going to be the over-the-top, but it's hard to say how this is going to break down. And dare I say that there could be two relevant wide receivers on the Bills that you could play weekly, including a flex position?
You shouldn't have to say, can I, you know, do I dare? Because we saw last year when Josh Allen came back from injury from weeks, 11 through 17 or 12 through 17, he had two quarterbacks in the top 22 players in the league. He had wide receivers.
He had two quarterbacks.
He had two wide receivers. In the top 20, he had Robert Foster and Zay Jones. They were both top 20 wide receivers during that time. He can support two guys, and I think he will next year.
Are we also going to acknowledge – should we acknowledge Cole Beasley at all?
No. I'm a Cowboy fan, and Cole Beasley got to choose where he went to play, right? That's something that happened.
Players make bad decisions all the time.
Gosh, man, he really thought he was going to come in and have a significant role on this team and didn't take it.
When I'm looking at Josh Allen's passer chart on Next Gen Stats, his best green area is right where Cole Beasley makes his money. I'm just saying, can we hypothetically imagine a world where Cole Beasley...
No.
Leave me alone.
No. Because Cole Beasley... I'm not drafting him. Catches every game, like three catches for 26 yards. That's not someone you want.
I don't even know if I projected Cole Beasley yet.
I did, and it wasn't good.
I really think he's going to be more of a safety blanket for him. But I think in PPR leagues, if you're looking for a late round pick in a deep bench league, he might be a decent one.
Nope.
You're on Adam Humphrey's train. Come on.
For fantasy purposes, he's irrelevant.
Thank you. I am on Adam Humphreys' train, though, she just said. Love it.
I also love Humphreys. I was so disappointed when he got sniped right before me in, like, the 19th round in the Scott Fish Bowl or 20th round. It was really late, and I was like, he's still here? And he got taken right before me. I was getting excited. Mariota makes his money over the middle of the field. I like Delanie Walker. He is 35 years old. He's a bigger dude, and he's coming back from this injury. I'm worried he's going to be slower is my biggest injury, and that he's going to put on – that he might have put on a little bit of weight. And I think that Humphreys may kind of fill in and take some of that tight end love over the middle and might be a very sneaky play. You might see that I took Corey Davis this year. He was one of my do-not drafts last year, and I think that he could be a good value – this year. I expect Mariota to do better. He was also a do not touch for me last year, and I still don't want Mariota, but I think Davis could actually be a fairly decent option that you can get in the middle to late rounds.
Barf.
I couldn't have said it better. Barf.
Look, it's not a popular opinion, and that's what I said last year was barf, but
six targets. Mariota threw the ball six times in the first drive. All six targets went to Humphreys. Isn't that insane?
No.
Four completions.
I know.
I actually got a lot of heat. Just as Scott Fishbowl mocks were ramping up just before we were about to start drafting, I made a post about the fact that I looked at Humphreys' ADP and the mock data that had been compiled by some various Twitter sources, and I got a lot of flack for saying that I would take Adam Humphreys in like the 20th round. And I think he's such a huge value. Like, in full PPR and for a league where you get points per first downs.
No,
y'all are starting to come around on me and I feel better. I'm not alone anymore.
No, I like Humphreys. He's talented. I don't understand why. Maybe it's just because he's on the Titans and it's a Mariota thing and everyone just doesn't want players from the Titans. I get that. But they're going to be better this year.
Do we think they would be better with Ryan Tannehill at their starter over Mariota?
I don't think so.
People keep
saying that. But I mean, like, what did Tannehill really show you in Miami that was like, oh, he'll be so much better? I don't know. I don't see it. But I do see that Mariota loves the slot, right? He loves passing to the slot. That's the where he does his best work. Corey Davis last year, 3 out of his 4 touchdowns came out of the slot. Adam Humphries is that slot player, so that really interests me. I just think he's going to be peppered with targets. Not necessarily, you know, it's not going to give him 100 yards a game whatsoever. He'll probably be like a 56-yard player. Like, I don't know where I just came up with that number from, 56 yards. But I can see him getting, like, 9 catches for 56 yards. And sometimes that's what you need in your second flex once you have injuries and some bye weeks, you know?
I agree. And I'm going to talk about a couple other players that I took. One, I'm just so excited to have on my team because I don't think I'll get him on any other teams because he's going to be drafted much too early for me, is Baker Mayfield. I love Baker. I think he's going to have a huge year. I got him at the end of the 9th or the beginning of the 9th round. Yeah. I think that's a pretty good value for him. And he's just going to be one of those players that I'm going to have a lot of fun watching this year. And I really want him to do well. One other guy that I want to talk about that no one really talks about because he doesn't have that great of hands is Will Fuller. And with Kiki going down, it makes the value a little bit better there. But when Will Fuller was healthy, I feel like I'm saying that a lot. When Will Fuller was healthy, he has great rapport with Watson. He just catches bomb after bomb. What do you guys think is going to happen with Fuller this year?
He's an incredibly efficient wide receiver. I bought a couple shares of him this offseason. I don't think he is going to come like guns a-blazing, you know, right out of the gate. It still remains to be seen, I think, what happened with Kuti. It sounds like reports are initially positive, but then again, we saw the AJ Green situation escalate pretty quickly. I think it's a good thing that we didn't hear worse news today. If he underwent testing and they saw some more ligament damage on an MRI or something, that would be a big problem. If it's maybe a mild ankle sprain, hopefully we should see him back. If not by week one, you know, sort of end of the season, but. I like Fuller. I just think that this news, like QT, might affect Duke Johnson a little bit more than it does Fuller, just because, you know, QT wasn't a big average depth of target guy. I love him. I think he's great in PPR formats. But if you're looking for a guy where Deshaun Watson can maybe throw to him out of the slot, I think Duke Johnson would fill the role very nicely.
Yeah, and what I was going to say about Will Fuller, when he plays, like that's what people have to say. When he plays, he is good. Yes, that is true. But, I mean, when we look at his injury history in the NFL, his rookie season, he had hamstring issues that turned into a setback of hamstring issues and then a knee strain. And then you go into his second year, he has a shoulder fracture and then chest rib fracture and then a knee strain. That was all in 1 year. And then you go into last year, he had hamstring issues and then an ACL tear. Like, that's a lot of different body parts. All 3 seasons, he's missed a significant amount of time due to these injuries. Can we trust him to be healthy?
No, I think trust is a very strong word there, but I do love the upside. The games that he plays,
so much upside.
He has a lot of upside, and that's kind of what you're looking for in those 7 to, you know, what we were talking about, the 7 to 12 rounds. You're really looking for that upside.
And I'm with you because I think if he was healthy all these seasons, he would be a top, you know, 3-round pick. He is really good when he's on the field. He's more of that boom or bust play type of guy, but he produces a lot. So it definitely has injury risk has been put into that ADP. I don't think he's going at an insanely high rate or anything like that.
No, and I think that if you're looking at like dynasty leagues, I do think that reports about him in coming back from the ACL have been overall positive, but you still want to temper expectations for a guy who just has significant injury history in general. I think that maybe in a dynasty league it's off-putting, right? Like if you see him come back and maybe he doesn't look like himself, maybe that's a buy low opportunity, buy super low. Cause I still think he's going relatively cheap.
And I think if you draft him, like if I'm drafting him, I'm drafting him knowing I'm going to trade him. The second he has that 150-yard, 2-touchdown game, I'm going to get a lot for him, and I'm going to be happy because he's going to get injured a game later.
Specifically one game later.
Yeah.
Exactly. Later. Yeah. Not less, not more. Okay. So anything else you guys would like to talk about from our draft, or have we pretty much gone over everything?
So I think a lot of people, I just want to hit on really quick. A lot of people are like, oh my goodness, you have two players from the same teams. You know, I have Connor Juju and I have Godwin Howard.
This is haunted Michelle.
And I am not.
She doesn't sleep anymore.
I did not go into this draft thinking, you know, I want two players from both teams. But I did feel like the value was good enough. Like I felt like I was getting a great value from where they were. And I'm not going to not choose people because I'm scared of that. If I think they're going to produce, then I think they're going to produce. It doesn't matter. Like, O.J. Howard is my top three tight end. That doesn't make him a not top three tight end just because I have Godwin on my team already. Like, I clearly think they'll both do great anyways. So I'm fine with having two players from one team on my roster. It's going to be okay. And if they're really good and I want to, you know, differentiate my assets, I can trade them and I can get, you know, good pieces because I think they'll be good players and they have trade value.
Can I just point out, you also have Josh Allen and John Brown.
Yeah. Oh yeah, I do. But that's more connection. Of a connection. That's the connection. Yeah. It's not so much the, you know, pass catchers.
100%. It is definitely an anomaly, though, and kind of funny. It was funny to watch the draft happen because you're right there on the turn. And so on the 1-2 turn, you took Connor and Juju. And then on the 5-6 turn, you took Godwin and Howard. And then on the 11-12 turn, you took Allen and Brown.
Yeah, they're just players I love, and I'm never going to let that defer me. And I do almost kind of regret not taking Tevin Coleman over O.J. Howard right there, just because there's so many good tight ends later on. But O.J. Howard, I'm going to take him in the sixth round probably every time because, man, I love
you are getting a top guy at his position when you are drafting O.J. Howard. I'm not afraid to say that. You are not getting a top guy at his position when you draft Tevin Coleman.
Okay, that's true. And also, I love seeing on the draft board that Kelce, Kittle, and Ertz all went in the middle of the second round.
Yeah. Yep.
And I get my guy, who is my tight end two on the season. I do have him over Kittle, and I have him over Ertz. And I get him four rounds later. I am happy with that value, so that's why I went with him.
You got Howard in the sixth, and I got Hunter Henry in the sixth, late in the sixth, which I was very happy with. I do like Howard more than Henry, but I do love Henry. They came out of the gate last night swinging and throwing to Henry. And I also like that Phillip Rivers has a propensity in the past. You've seen the connection with him and a tight end. Him and Gates, one of the greatest tight end QB duos of all time. I think Hunter Henry is due for a big season also.
Yeah, I agree with you there.
Speaking of the Chargers, can we talk about what happened last night at this game and really the future impact of this? Because what I saw was not good for Melvin Gordon. Austin Eckler and Justin Jackson looked like they could carry that workload just fine.
I mean, yeah, that's the issue with running backs right now, is that their backups are going to do just fine. We saw Connor take the bell roll and ran with it. We saw even players like C.J. Anderson cover for Gurley and was great. And then Damian Williams cover for Hunt, and he was great. I think last year was really a bad year for running backs. I think Bell was trying to prove something, and all he did was prove that we don't need you. And then a lot of other teams kind of proved that too. The only team I would say that does need a running back is Dallas with Zeke, because he is just a difference maker for that team. They don't have a strong enough quarterback. He's much better when Zeke's there. But I don't think they need Melvin Gordon. I think they'd be stupid to pay him, honestly. I think Gordon deserves a paycheck. But at the same time, I think the Chargers wouldn't be smart to give it to him.
My only thought, though, is, like, do you want to stir the pot when presumably you have Phillip Rivers at the upper end of his career, right? Like, how many years do you have left in Phillip Rivers? If you think you have a super, you know, you had a playoff run last season, if you really think you can take that to the house and win yourself a Super Bowl, with Phillip Rivers. I think you have a better shot with Melvin Gordon than I think you do Austin Ekeler and Justin Jackson. And that's just me. So if you really want to make a run for it, sign the dude to like a two-year contract, like with the money that he wants in those two seasons, or I don't know. I feel like
I don't think he would sign a 2-year contract. That's the problem.
I don't either.
If it was front loaded with money.
I don't think he would. I think he wants. Yeah, I think he wants that job security. And as vital as the running back position is, how easily replaceable they are, and he knows this. I can't blame him for wanting to get a 4 or 5 year contract. He wants that security for the future for him and his family and whatnot. But from the reports I've seen, they're only about $3 million a year difference.
That's a lot, though.
I don't see why they can't meet in the middle. You know, okay, he wants $3 million more. We don't want to give him $3 million more. We'll give you $1.5 million a year more. Let's meet in the middle and get it done.
But see, that's the thing is I don't think that these running backs are willing to negotiate. They think that they see these wide receivers that are being paid silly money and not playing as significant of a role in the offense. And then the wide receivers also have a longer life expectancy because they're not taking all of these hits. So I 100% agree with the running backs that they should be paying more or be paid more. And I think that there should be an issue that the rookie contracts shouldn't be as long as what they are. I think that maybe rookie contracts should be like 3 years. And that way these players can grab this 5-year contract when they're still very young and in their prime. But that's really for another discussion. But these running backs, they really just don't have leverage. He doesn't have leverage. He has another year on this contract. He doesn't have leverage.
Well, that's the issue.
I was going to say that's exactly the issue. He wants to be paid as a top 2 or 3 running back in the league. And he needs to realize he's not a top two or three running back in the league.
Yeah. I think people are, you know, more into they think the Chargers should pay him because of fantasy, but he's been a volume guy. I mean, before this year, he was actually super inefficient. He was not that great on the ground at all. This last year, he was very efficient. I'll give him that. But also, dude can't stay healthy. I mean, if you can't depend on him in big games, then why are you going to pay him? Before this year, they weren't a winning team. It's not like he made them a winning team at all. I don't get why you would pay a guy like Melvin Gordon. And he does not deserve top 3 running back contract. Zeke does deserve to be the top paid running back in the league.
Well, Gordon does not. You have a guy who wants to be paid like a top end running back, but these teams don't even want to pay the top end running backs like a top end running back. That's the issue, is that Michelle, I think you hit it on the head. Le'Veon Bell tried to make a point last season, and I think the timing, perhaps, you know, between the Todd Gurley injury, I think it all just sort of blew up. I think Todd Gurley gets paid, he gets a big fat check, and then you realize he's got some arthritis in his knee that we can't use him the way that we want to use him.
Yeah. You know, what's crazy is that this whole, you know, us talking right now could be so different if Todd Gurley never gets injured and they win a Super Bowl, or even they get the Super Bowl and, you know, Gurley is a star in that game. We're talking about a different whole scenario here. And if Kareem Hunt never goes crazy in a hotel lobby and they make it deep into the playoffs and Kareem Hunt's carrying them, like, we could be saying how important running backs are right now, but they pretty much showed us how unimportant running backs are.
Yeah, they really flipped the script, I think.
Yeah, there's only a handful of running backs that are true bell cows that deserve that upper echelon running back. I understand, you know, wanting to feel like you are at that level, but for the most part, every running back in the NFL can easily be replaced. And even if the replacement doesn't give you that exact same production to the level, you can get somebody that's close enough.
Yep. It's tough. Any other games, any other big takeaways? We had a lot happen yesterday, even though it was just preseason one. I feel like there was a lot that could be taken away from several of the first quarters. Anything that stood out to you guys?
Daniel Jones. Are we going to acknowledge how awkward it must have been for Eli Manning to walk back into that building? Like, that's going to be, I think, to see that, I mean, it wasn't like you saw Daniel Jones come in as like the the third string guy against a third string defense. You saw him come in sort of back to back with Eli Manning. Like, the Jets had a very short drive, and then it was back to the Giants. And so we saw them really quickly, and they looked very different.
They did.
Well, very bad at first and then very good after it.
Well, yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, I don't know how long they can sort of keep Daniel Jones at bay. And you know what? Like, the offense literally looked like they were playing differently for Daniel Jones. I mean, like,
week 12,
Wayne Gallman was running like his pants were on fire behind Daniel Jones. It was so bizarre. It was kind of like we saw that with Baker when he came into the game versus the Jets, right? Like, the offensive line was just letting Tyrod Taylor get just ripped apart. And you see Baker come into the game. That man is fully protected, and they are motivated to protect that man. Like, there is such a thing as just wanting to play for a quarterback that you're rooting for. And seeing the play of the offense, I feel like they were kind of rooting for Daniel Jones. And I don't think it's necessarily an attack on Eli Manning, but I think Eli Manning's definitely got to worry, like, sooner than he probably wants to admit.
I agree, and he's not going to have Golden Tate for the first four games. I expect that the Giants are probably going to lose all four of those. They might win one. I'd be surprised by week five if we don't have serious talk about Daniel Jones being brought in.
We talked about it earlier. I still think I'm going to hold to week 12 after their bye week.
I think he looked good, though. I think I think they drafted him far too early. I'm like 99% sure he would have been there at 17 for their second first-round pick.
Yep.
But so you could have gotten the value there. But you know what? If he can be your guy of the future, sure. Go for it. Why not? And reports have actually been sort of positive about Daniel Jones, which I've been more surprised about. I think everybody sort of mocked him from the right out of the gate, and
he may make us eat our words. And I'd be happy to have that happen. As a fantasy football enthusiast, as an analyst, as a podcast host, I want good players. I want more viable players to make the game more interesting for us and to make the NFL better, right? That's what we all want to see. So I am hoping he does well, even though I don't, you know, Giants, blah. Yeah, go Cowboys. One other guy, this is a completely other game, Patriots and Lions. The one guy that really stood out to me, they threw the ball. They had like 20 people that caught passes in that game. But Jacoby Myers, six receptions, 69 yards, and two touchdowns. I think this guy's going to be a difference maker and definitely a late round target that people should be looking at.
You literally hit on the one game that we missed, but let me tell you this. As I scrolled through Twitter, he was lighting up my entire news feed this morning.
I think we also see guys like this all the time, you know, shine in camp and then they end up being nothing. So I'm not going to get too excited about it yet. Obviously there's some targets to go around in New England right now. I mean, we've been hearing that Harry's been a little bit of a disappointment and they're taking a little bit longer to adjust to the NFL than we expected. Then they just have Julian Edelman and maybe they get back Josh Gordon. And if that happens, I think we can stop any discussion about anyone doing anything.
Right. That does change a lot. Not having Gronk there and then having – we'll see what happens with Lacoste. He's kind of been a guy for me that I've been saying keep your eye on. We know Brady loves to throw to the tight end.
Didn't Lacoste get injured?
He did, and I'm curious how serious that's really going to end up being. But if Gordon doesn't come back, a lot of people are really high on Edelman this year. Edelman usually misses games. He's getting up there in age also. There's a lot of opportunity for one of these guys to step up.
But there was last year too, and nobody did it.
That's the issue with the Patriots, though, is that they're such a good offense that they can sort of rotate.
Like, people were so excited about Dorsett and Hogan and anyone that was going to possibly touch the ball. You know, they were just going to be amazing, and nobody was. It was Julian Edelman once he came back, and You know, Gronk barely did much either, and then James White. So I think Patriots can do a lot with very little players actually making a fantasy impact whatsoever. So I'm not getting excited about any Patriot receiver this year. Like last year, I was trying to find any single one that could be touching the ball. And in the preseason, I was like, okay, who's going to be that guy? But this year, I'm kind of off of it because Brady doesn't need that. He doesn't need it. He spreads the ball around because he's a really great quarterback. He's just amazing, and he has an amazing coach. So, no, I'm not excited about anyone there except if Julian Edelman would just fall in ADP because his ADP is too high right now. He would be the only one I'd be excited for.
Okay. Yeah, the Patriots are really good, and I mean really, really good at finding good NFL talent. But that doesn't always translate over to fantasy. They got a bunch of guys who are okay NFL talent, but not anybody to get excited about for fantasy purposes.
Yeah.
Okay. Kyler Murray, what do we think?
You know, he looked okay. He didn't, like, blow your socks off, but he looked okay.
But I think if you were a Kyler Murray truther, that opening drive is going to skyrocket his ADP so fast, you're not going to be able to get your pants on straight. It concerns me not for the fact that I think it's actually going to mean something spectacular. Like, I think the verdict is still out as to how the offense is going to look. But if you were already on the Kyler Murray hype train, you're going to see that opening drive and you're going to be like, yes, I'm going to draft him in the fifth round.
Yeah, I think by them not scoring a touchdown, that it may keep the truthers down just a little bit and keep from some of the hype. But he looked very decisive and smart with his with what he was doing with the ball, and what I took away from that was he's not throwing it in the numbers. Everything was out. Everyone was to the outside, which follows exactly the game plan that we could have expected from Cliff Kingsbury. So I think we're going to see a lot more of that. And what I really think is solidified for me is David Johnson. David yes. Johnson is going to have 100 receptions this year. It's going to happen.
And he's going to have space.
Yes. And they're finally going to utilize him again. DJ is going to finish as a top five back. DJ will finish top five this year.
I agree.
I believe it.
I've been trying to get him in so many leagues. Nobody's selling him. And I don't blame them. He's going to be a stud. He's going to have that bounce back year that Gurley did once they got rid of Jeff Fisher.
Yeah, I kind of want the five spot. I got to be honest. I want DJ at the five, and then I get the best of what's left coming around in the second turn, and I'll be really happy with any of the top five now. It's been the top four, but it's really the top five. DJ just needs to be in there with those other four guys. Anything else? Any other major takeaways from last night?
One guy that's been – and I hate to – bring it back to the Dolphins because, like I said, I trashed them earlier. They're a garbage team. But one guy who was standing out in camp and then actually had a really good game last night was Preston Williams. He's somebody that you just might want to keep an eye on, late round flyer if you're playing in a deep league where you got more than six or seven bench spots. He went out and had four catches for 97 yards last night. He looked really, really impressive.
All right. Well, I just want to give a big thanks to Michelle and Kate for joining us tonight. They put out a lot of great stuff on Twitter, guys. You can follow Michelle at BallBlastM. That's E-M, BallBlastEM. You can follow Kate at FF BallBlast. And you can follow George at BFTG Pod. You can follow me at SleeperWire LBB. Anything else you guys would like to add? Anything you'd like to plug in here?
No, thank you so much for having us. This was fun.
This was very fun. I feel like we could have talked for like another 3 hours and we wouldn't even have gotten into the nitty gritty.
I know. And we've already been on here for nearly 2 hours and it's been a lot of fun. We would love to have you guys on another show as we get closer to the season or maybe once the season has kicked off. It's really been a blast for us.
A ball blast?
A ball blast.
An absolute ball blast.
Yeah. My only plug, guys. You got to listen to our podcast, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Ball Blast Podcast. It's Ball Blast, one word. Ball Blast.
Blast.
We will help you blast the balls of your league mates.
Yeah, sometimes we have segments on called Blast His Balls, where we bring on guys to debate with us, and we just tear them down. Take his balls away.
Jason Moore of the Fantasy Footballers. We had Garrett Price of Dynasty Nerds. We had some fun times there on the Ball Blast podcast, so be sure to check it out.
Well, definitely will, and hope to see you guys around soon.
Thank you.
Thanks, guys.
Bye. Thanks for tuning in, guys. We have 7 spots left in our Pro-Am. They are going quick. Go check us out at sleeperwire.com and catch you next time.